T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
8 o'clock, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Resetting things a little bit here. Nick Szepkowski and Anthony Herron with you. Spent a lot of the first half of the show tonight discussing the Cubs disaster that was today. I kind of thought today's Cubs game was, and maybe you came across this, whether it was back in your youth football days, your high school football days, college, or maybe even in the NFL. Did you ever have a teammate when you're in the weight room that would like be overly loud for no reason before he lifted? Like maybe he's going to max out on squats or bench press or deadlift, and he just like starts screaming?
Yeah.
You ever have that?
Oh,
I'm sure you did.
Oh, yeah.
All levels, I can assume, probably. I think everyone that...
Definitely high school and college. You don't see it as much in the NFL. But yeah, high school and college for sure.
Did you ever have it where the guy that was like the yelly, screamy guy failed miserably to get the weight up?
The epic fail.
And you just kind of sat there, you're like, all right, you're the guy that's just slapping yourself in the face. Screaming! Oh my God! I'm going to squat this much! And then as soon as he gets to the rack, he just goes down like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Seen that before?
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's what I thought of the Cubs today. Because after the Bodie Grand Slam the other night, when they walk off in thrilling fashion and just like, oh my God. And I'm not a huge believer in like baseball momentum on a day-to-day basis. I think there's momentum in the game, no doubt about it, of certain big plays going one way or the other. I think in the game that it exists, but baseball momentum
is like a turning point in the season.
Yeah,
like a lot of folks are talking about.
I don't buy that as much because it's just such a weird game and it's based on so many random
happenings. So just get shut down the entire day and have 3 batters get hit or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Bodie hits a grand slam.
Right. Yeah. One botched play in the infield, a couple hit batters later, and all of a sudden a 3-0 lead is a 4-3 loss for the Nats. But I do, like, after a game like that, you start to always kind of wonder of like, oh, yeah, well, one of the storylines is going to be, is this going to be a taking off point? Is this going to be that? So I thought of the Cubs after the Bodie Grand Slam, the walk-off Grand Slam on Sunday night, being the guy that's screaming, slapping themselves. I'm going to squat this. Da-da-da-da. They walk up to the weight rack today. They walk up to the squat rack, and immediately as they throw the weight on their shoulders, they just drop. Like, it's 3-0 before you could blink in that game. Second time through the order, it's 5-0. And I get it. The Cubs are the comeback kids. And there's, oh, we don't quit, 27 outs, that whole thing.
Those guys.
That's cute and all.
They respect 90.
That game was over pretty early on today. And it was frustrating if you're a Cubs fan. And we're kind of picking up the pieces from that. But what did you take away from the game today? And how do you kind of fix things here for the last 6 weeks stretch run of the season? 312-644-6767. It is Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron with you on 670 The Score, Elkhart, Indiana. We're popular in the state of Indiana today.
We seem to be.
I know. Feels like half of our calls have come from Indiana.
Thanks, Indy.
Elkhart and Sam is next on The Score. Who's Cindy?
Indy.
Indy.
Yeah.
What's up, Sam?
Yeah, well, thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about the Cubs starting pitching. It's not what we thought it was going to be. It's not what it should be. But my question is, why has Kevin Hickey, the pitching coach, why hasn't he gotten his share of criticism and taken the blame? And better yet, why is he still our pitching coach?
It's Jim Hickey, so I don't think Kevin Hickey's going to appreciate the telephone call there,
Sam. Jim Hickey, I'm sorry.
And it's all good. Trust me, Kevin, Jim, John, Joe, it's
all those hits.
It's fine. Yeah.
The guys still are pitching.
I don't think you're going to fire a guy. To answer your question there, Sam, and appreciate the telephone call, I don't think you fire a guy right away in, but I think it is like the first month of the season. Okay. All right. Yeah. Guys can have bad months. It can be slow starts and whatnot. But it does raise concern with me. Is it by chance that all these guys are having career worst type years? Is it all by chance? Is it something that Jim Hickey is doing? I don't have enough information to present a case in favor or against Jim Hickey. I do know that, yes, he is a common thread in all of this of Cubs starting pitching has been disastrous. Jim Hickey is the new pitching coach. Both of those things are true for 2018. But also you look at the way the bullpen has been, and it's been one of the best bullpens in the National League, even with all the use that's gone into it.
Right.
Do you not give credit to Jim Hickey for that then?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a better bullpen than it was a year ago. And yes, money was spent to improve it, but it has performed better as well. So do you not give credit in that way then as well? So I have a trouble of like making it as simple as it's all the pitching coach doing this. Because even when, like, Jake Arrieta gives all the credit to Chris Bosio back in the day of, oh, he's the one that got me to be who I was, doesn't mean that even after the great historic run in 2015 into the start of 2016, that Arrieta didn't have hiccups before and after that, mm-hmm. that everything was just fixed. And, like, was that then Chris Bosio's fault? I have trouble making it as simple as it being the pitching coach who's at fault for a starting staff that's been nothing short of a big-time disappointment.
Well, especially in a sport like baseball, there's obviously techniques, there's fundamentals that go into success. And certainly when you're talking about pitching, where just the micrometers of a difference in your release point can affect the velocity, and where your arm slide is as you're delivering can affect, you know, where how much movement you end up getting on it as at late in the pitch as it approaches the plate. So, yes, I mean, you know, Jim Hickey has a role in that, and they're breaking down film and they're watching these things. But overall, especially when you have a fairly experienced pitching staff. So, I mean, there's track records that these guys have had in recent years. I don't think it should be surprising that John Lester wasn't necessarily able to sustain his level of excellence he had going as they approached the All-Star break. It was really surprising that he was the ace throughout the bulk of the first half of the season anyway at his age. And the thought was that we brought in some guys here over the last couple of seasons that should be able to surpass John Lester. You know, just like Sahad Sharma was talking about on the show earlier, they just weren't able to do it because they haven't been pitching well either. So, I mean, you know, for Jose Quintana, he didn't seem like the guy he did on the South Side last year. That's
no, not even close. Season. Well, he's close to the guy he was on the South Side last year, but in terms of what his career is, he's nowhere near that. Like, he's nowhere near that player. 608 texter, Wilson Contreras, a common thread, too, in all of the starting pitching. And that's if you look at the numbers of the, who are the catchers are the best at the pitch framing and get the most borderline calls called in their favor. Wilson Contreras is not one of them.
I'm actually more intrigued by that than Jim Hickey.
I am intrigued by it. I also have a theory on it, though, of that how many young catchers come into the game and all ultimately are great framers. I think that part of the framing comes with your reputation. In that Wilson Contreras, I will say that he isn't as jumpy as he was when he first came up. I mean, mm-hmm. God, when you saw him receive the ball at first, it was like, good God. Don't give that guy any caffeine before a game. Settle down right there. Relax. And he's not like that as much now, but it's not entirely gone. I also think that part of that is just reputation of, okay, he's known as a guy that's a little bit jumpy behind home plate, does a lot behind home plate, moves a lot behind home plate. Not known as like this poised veteran that everything's cool, calm, and collected always, like Buster Posey, like Yadier Molina, like Sal Perez in Kansas City. And I think that part of that goes into this whole breaking down umpires that we did part of last hour of some of that reputation goes into the back of an umpire's mind when he's giving you a called strike three
Woo-ha!
Or making it a ball call that makes it a full count or walks a batter instead. Like, I think that the reputation does have something to say in terms of pitch framing. Like, I think that is an honest to God truth of borderline question call. Yep, I'm going to trust this catcher more than I'm going to trust other catchers, and Wilson Contreras doesn't have that. I'm not saying that he's great at it, because like I just said, he is still jumpy behind home plate. But I do think that there is a little bit of a mind game going on there as well, the guys that call balls and strikes, and why, again, Ben Zobrist was right in his assessment of the home plate umpire today.
And then we get the New World Order, where all the Terminators are going to come in and call balls and strikes, and there's going to be no humans, and everybody's going to be out of work. Like, I don't even when I go to the grocery store, I don't like doing the self-checkout at the grocery store. Let me have a human there swiping my items for me.
One of the currency best will be exchanged ever. What are you talking about?
No, here? No. I want humans to work.
The self-checkout is so easy, so simple.
Sometimes.
Just give me my stuff and I'm out.
I always get in a fight with the self-checkouts, though, because it seems like I always get to the one where the weight is off on like the scale for the bag. Mm-hmm. And it's like you buy a gallon of milk, put the milk down, and it'll either fire off thinking that it weighs more than a gallon should weigh. Like, oh, you've added too many things to your cart. Like, I know it's the gallon of milk I just swiped and put down. And you have to have customer service come over.
You have
over
to have a human come over and correct
over
it
and
for
belly
you.
Out and like, okay, yeah, it does this a lot. It's kind of an older scale. It doesn't work too well. And then it's, you do it, you inevitably you swipe two or three more things, you set them down, and oh, the weight's not right. Yep. Those waffles that you bought, those registered incorrectly. So you're going to have to re-swipe those and do this. And inevitably, a human comes out and helps you out often enough for it to
and,
be.
And you
it's
hug
a great
them,
idea,
and there's
a
moment
premise.
Between you and that human because
not
you've...
Not so much that.
No, not
but yeah.
that far. Okay.
I'm good on the human interaction. Get my stuff. So
God, you are such a millennial, dude. Like, you hate interacting with anyone, don't you?
Yeah, it's boring. Unless
you
it's going to be
boring.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not here to make
promise your day. Tony Gill a level of interest, or he doesn't want to interact with you.
He doesn't want to interact with you at all. I think that's safe to say.
There
I
was a
caught
question.
On to that yet?
There was a question on the text line earlier about your robo umps. So how would that function during the game when the Terminator umps are there? Because it's going to happen at some point, just like the college football playoff is going to expand to 500 teams at some point. It's coming
Which
eventually.
Shouldn't happen. I want to be on the other
I
side
of
history
doesn't.
On that.
But
I
it's going to happen one day. So when the robo-umps are taking over baseball and all the humans have been run out and there's no more Busta Rhymes woo-ha behind the plate, how will that function? Will
well,
there
you can
be
still
like a
have
blinking
your Buster
light
Rhymes, hoo-ha.
Behind the bat? Oh, just put it in the, like, put an automated thing in the machine?
You have your umpires behind home plate,
mm-hmm.
and they literally hold an iPad, or they hold whatever the Microsoft version of an iPad is there, and they have the information
mm-hmm.
pop up, boom. That's a strike. And it's not that you're
Well, then why are they there, though?
Why
if
are they
if
there?
All they're going to do is hold the tablet.
There's still going to be plays at the plate. There's still going to be plays at the plate. There's going to be fair foul balls that are there, the home plate umpire traditionally calls. So they're there for that. But you've proven that, to me, computers, electronics, get it correct, more accurate, and there's not a variable thrown
So they're just
in
like lounging in a recliner, just staring at a tablet.
Yes, they have
calling
the,
balls and strikes.
They have the
they're
technology to do it. I have no problem with them doing it. It's like, you're not taking a job away. The umpire will still be relied upon to actually make the call and say, yep, computer says this. It's a strike. Oh, that's outside of the zone. It's a ball. They make that call. They can stand there, and that's fine. They hold their iPad and do it. But in terms of actually being the deciding, it's my eyes saw it. Well, your eyes saw the wrong damn thing and stop calling it wrong. You have the information that's there, the technology that's there to make the correct call readily available right in front of your face. Then use it. What's wrong with that?
It's at least 10 to 20 years away.
10 to 20 years away. I'll take the under.
Because you have to calibrate each batter, which their strike zone is, needs the letters. Then you have to get that type of equipment that has no fails.
So you're telling me
no fails. It can not fail at all.
Got to be fail safe.
We have fail-proof. The technology to, like, literally as a country, 50 years ago, we put a man, actually multiple men, on the moon. Launched them from the moon, brought them back to Earth. But
allegedly.
We don't have the allegedly. Technology yeah. to expand the strike zone for a guy that's 6'4 as opposed to being 6'2. You don't think we have that technology?
This is estimated on the television.
Each time. Like, every batter has to have their own specific strike zone.
Right. And it's supposed to be, it's not supposed to be based off of your stance. It's supposed to be based off of your height anyway.
Yes.
So how hard is that to program in? That should literally take like 2 seconds.
So Rizzo's 6'4 and LaStella's whatever LaStella is, 5'9
or
something
whatever
like
he
that.
Is. Yeah.
So then they just look at the roster, just look at the program and say, all right,
well,
here's
the
strike
supposed
zone
to be. It's supposed
for LaStella.
It's easier letters when you're standing up if you're calling it by the way the rule is actually written.
And they have to have it work every single time, Shep. I know if you watch games where the ball didn't go exactly where it's supposed to be on the little Fox box or whatever they call it. But that technology of being 100% accurate is not there yet.
Okay, I'll take my chances on that as opposed to umpires that I see firsthand blatantly miss calls.
Hoo-ha! Yeah, but they're not.
Bring them up.
They're not. See, if you think the umpires are compromised, cool. Then that's a different thing.
I'm not saying that they're trying to. I'm just saying that
exactly.
I can watch a game and say that that umpire is, oh boy, his strike zone is not what the actual strike zone is today.
And I'm a fan of getting a electronic strike zone, but it has to be 100%. If we're going to do that, specifically that has to be 100% fail safe.
I'm missing where the big issue is with it, because we have hitters that are different sizes.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the holdup is in all this.
Yeah, this is a...
It should essentially be then... I'm assuming this technology and the programs that you write, like the camera zooms in on whatever is picking up and breaking down the ball, crossing home plate, and saying, all right, this is where the strike zone is on this size hitter. That's where it'll be.
No, not this size hitter. This hitter.
Yes. Okay,
this specific guy.
This specific hitter. Yes. That should not be difficult at all for things we have technology
for. If it's not difficult, then it should already be here, and it's not.
It's not?
No, it's not here.
Or we just choose not to use it. We try to choose to hold it back in order to stay with old ways.
That box that they use is not a box for that specific hitter. That box is generic.
You could easily stretch that box to be a different size if you wanted to.
I'm not saying
stretch. Instead of making the graphic what it is for a given at bat.
You're not listening there.
I am listening.
It's not the box that needs to be stretched. It is the system that needs to be calibrated so it can be 100% right.
He said system.
The system has to be chewing gum on the radio.
The actual, I'm assuming you're chewing gum, right? I hope. Or are you chewing something good? Because Shep is hungry.
No.
Dude, I know.
All right.
Oh, man.
But the point Herb is making is that the box we're looking at on TV is different than what's actually would be tracking the balls and strikes. So the TV version of the box is just a mechanical thing just for television, for our TV eyes. It's not necessarily accurate to the batter that's in the box themselves.
Okay, so then you just switch it to be accurate to the batter then. I'm missing where that's such a hard thing to do.
Build it, Shep.
If you have...
then build it.
Trust me, if I could, I would.
You're making it sound like you already know what's here.
How I'm missing how it's that much harder to come up with it. Of okay, there's the graphic for TV, then just institute it to the batter that's actually there. Then, like, how is that difficult?
It's wrong on TV too.
Occasionally, it's wrong.
That's why you need to be 100%.
Oh my god!
If you're gonna have this system that's supposed to be improved, why not
have it be
100% right?
Improved.
Who are you arguing with
whatsoever?
Then? If it's wrong, who are you arguing with?
Hey, too damn bad.
Cyberdyne.
Too damn bad. Technology said
Sarah
that you were
Connor
wrong.
To storm
Technology
Cyberdyne with
said
you.
That you were wrong. I mean, I am missing how it is that hard for them to switch the size of the strike zone or the perceived strike zone in this computer system.
Now, personally,
like all the things you can do with radar guns and all the advanced technology on having every velocity of every pitch and every launch angle and all that dissected to a perfect accuracy, I am entirely missing like how we cannot come up with that technology.
Personally, for me,
someone's burying it and keeping you from having
the human element. To me, goes beyond because the size of the batter in the box is a big part of it for me and the accuracy of that. But to me, the human element also goes beyond that because the by the letter of the law part of thing that is supposedly applied on a lot of these subjective calls in baseball and in football where, you know, you could call holding on every play, but you don't because it would slow the game down. But each crew will have their own subjective version of how they're calling holding in a particular game or what is really pass interference. And once you get into the playoffs and like in basketball where there's more physical play allowed by certain crews versus what you allow in other crews. To me, the subjective element of it is that when you actually put something in by the letter of the law, there's one version of it that a certain set of humans will think is accurate versus what another
just
set
like,
of humans
yeah,
will think is accurate.
Just like the Constitution to this day, just like the Bill of Rights to this day. It's,
and so there's one version of the strike zone that would go in, and I suppose in theory everyone would have to adjust to what that is, but the one version that is the strike zone may not actually be what a lot of folks are looking for, but there would be that one version.
Wouldn't
that everybody
it be nice
to
have the same set
to.
Of rules every day, though? Wouldn't it be nice to say, this is what the strike zone is? I know what I'm swinging at as a strike, or I know what I'm swinging at as a ball? Like, wouldn't that be a kind of cool concept?
I enjoy the human element of it.
You love the human elements of confusion and questionability.
That's part of the deal.
Like, I would like there for there to be like a written rule of like, yep, this is what a strike is. If it's in that zone, it's a strike. If it nips the zone, isn't majority in the zone, then it's not a strike. I don't get what's... I don't like the human element. Oh, a guy can mess up and that's okay. All right, well, if we have the technology that improves it.
The players can mess up, the coaches can mess up, right. The refs can mess up. Like, to me, there's just a bunch of humans on the field. They're all involved in the show and they're doing the best they can.
They get to go
Buster Rhymes when they want to.
They get their participation trophies, so they're happy with Tony over there.
Well, replace them all with robots then. Let's just watch robots play football and baseball too then. Let's just have a bunch of Terminators out there.
Rick Morrissey
throwing the balls
all of a
and swinging and missing and hitting home runs 8 million feet. Yeah, they're all out there participating in it. Like, everybody's taking part.
What was that awful baseball game for Super Nintendo called? Like, Super Baseball 2050 or 2020 or something? And it was all robots. And you'd play, and it was like your robots would play baseball, and then your machine would, like, literally burn up because it was overused. And that's how you played baseball. And I had a couple of friends that, like, they lived by this game religiously. And it's like, dude, this game sucks.
I bet all the robots would have a great move to first plate. Like, there'd be no John Lester. First they would plate. All be able to accurately, try to pick runners off.
Yeah.
There'd be none of this dribbler, like, bouncing the ball to first.
Can we literally do anything else? Can we go play Tiddlywinks? Can we go play pin the tail on a donkey? Like, is there any other thing we can do instead of play this god-awful robot baseball game? But, yeah, I had a couple friends that were just like, oh, my goodness, Super Baseball 2020 or whatever the heck it
was.
It
vaguely
was
familiar. I don't ever think I took part in that one.
It was brutal. 312-644-6767. A lot of people on hold want to get in on this conversation, and we'll continue to do that. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ben Zobrist today, first time in thousands upon thousands of games in his career where he's ever been thrown out arguing balls and strikes, told the umpire, hey, man, that's why you're going to be replaced by an electric strike zone one day.
It's a funny line.
And he's right. He's dead right.
It's a little bit below
Ben
the belt,
Zobrist.
But it's funny.
I'm fine with it because he's totally accurate, and I'm on board with what Ben
Zobrist
is
saying. He went for the guy's marbles, but I don't mind it because it was funny.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. He doesn't mind it because he's funny. I don't mind it because he's 100% correct.
One day home plate umpires
will not be calling balls and strikes. It'll instead be technology that does it for us, and it'll get it right, and I'm totally on board with
that.
Just
deliver it in the moment, Zobrist. Don't start walking away all calmly and then come back with your little zinger. Come up with it and deliver it in the moment. If not, go to the dugout and crack your teammates up.
And that's a lot of the texters are chiming in, a lot of the tweeters as well. He's at Big Ant Herron. I'm at Shep670 if you want to follow along with the show or participate in the show that way. A lot are chiming in. We missed our total reference to Seinfeld there in the where George is thinking up the comeback and thinking up the comeback and finally does. And it's, and the jerk store called. And they're running out of you. Just couldn't deliver that quite on time. Kind of a Ben Zobrist situation, it seemed like there of, I should have thought of this one. Or maybe somebody tipped it off to
he
him
deserved
when
it.
He got to talk to a couple of teammates.
I don't think he thought of it himself.
No, you don't think so?
No, I think somebody told him that.
I mean, he obviously didn't think of it on the fly.
Yeah,
we know that.
It doesn't seem like he'd come up with something as funny as that.
Maybe somebody shouted from the duck, hey, Zob, give him the robot ump line. He's like, you know what? I should give him the robot ump line. Then he storms back over there. And guess what? You're going to be replaced by a robot. Ha!
Damn.
You're out of here, Zobrist. Nobody tells me I'm getting replaced by a robot. That's exactly what happened.
Guys, can we stop saying robot? Because so many people are coming up here calling and saying they actually think there's going to be like a Rosie the Robot behind the plate replacing
Rosie
humans.
The robot.
That's what's going to happen.
Wow.
It's going to be an Enrico Palazzo-shaped robot. Like, it'll have darker hair. Like, Leslie Nielsen was graying at that point.
Let's not let this pass by. Tony, how old are you?
I am 25.
You have no idea who Rosie the Robot is, do you?
I do not. Wait, the Jetsons?
Oh,
hey, man. Let's go.
Check out Tony Gill.
Let's go, baby.
I have never been more proud of you than I am right now.
I would have bet every penny in my bank account. Tony didn't have a clue who Rosie the Robot was. I am stunned.
It doesn't make up for not having seen the program, but it's close.
I am shocked. It's close. Like, for a guy that doesn't watch something if it's not filmed before 2009 or so, because he doesn't have any memory of anything that happened pre-2009, I am absolutely shocked. Oh, my God.
They even look it up for Robot? Tony Gill.
Can you name any other Jetson character?
It's the summer of Gill.
Leroy Jetson.
Okay. Who was his boy? His boy.
Wait, that's not a Jetsons character.
No. He was close, was though.
Elroy. Elroy.
Yes, yeah, Elroy.
Yeah, I was going to say. Who was his wife?
Bruce Blank. Leroy Jetson. That's
Blank.
What it was.
His wife?
Jane.
Look at this. Right. Were you a big Jetsons guy? I felt like I was on the very back end of seeing the Jetsons as a kid. I'm shocked that Tony knows this much about the Jetsons.
I think that he went with Leroy Jetson is hilarious. I thought that was tongue-in-cheek. I thought that was just you grasping at straws because you had no idea who any other Jetsons characters were.
All right.
But you were just mixing up Leroy with Elroy. Okay.
Quick poll of everybody on the show, the four of us at least included, that are in this room together right now. Jetsons or Flintstones? You can only pick one. Which one?
Flintstones.
You choose?
Flintstones.
Jetsons. What?
Yeah, you're alone on this one, Tony. Yeah. I'm a Flintstones guy, too. Fred was my dude. Barney Rubble. My guy. 312-644-6767. 3-1. Tony loses that vote, but thanks for playing. Rockford, Tom, next up on the score. What's up, Tom?
No, it's a 1%.
All right, Tom's listening to the show right now or making an order of White Castle or something there. St. Charles, Ron, you're next up on the score. What's up, Ron?
Hey, Seth, love you on all the different shows you play. Let's make it 4-1 on the Flintstones.
Damn right, Ron.
Yeah, I love the Jetsons. I did know Rosie based on my age, but I would go with Flintstones. Hey, Anthony, I'm all about you on the let's keep everybody employed. So I'm like you, Anthony. Let's make sure we live it, Anthony. So do you go into your bank for every transaction, deposit your
score
check?
Oh.
Yeah, you need a quick 40 bucks. You're going to that Anthony. ATM, or are you waiting to tomorrow to go to the bank and see that teller?
That's a good question.
Anthony, so do you go through the manual toll, or do you actually go open road tolling, Anthony? So how many jobs are you keeping in Illinois?
I like it. That's a good question, Ron.
You just got lawyered the bleep up.
Rock calling
Anthony,
it.
Let's go with technology. But you use a smartphone probably, right? You're not calling everybody. You text. You tweet.
I do.
Technology, Anthony. We got to get the calls right.
Well, I'm not sure what the smartphone has to do with keeping people employed. There's a lot of people building smartphones that are making pennies
Anthony.
On the like pennies an hour.
Out-lawyering each other.
Right. So, Anthony, there's more people designing the software to call balls and strikes accurately based on whatever the size of the batter is. Than the guy behind on plate. He could be there represented for historical purposes.
So the people working the checkout counter at Jewel Osco, they should just go get a tech job. And Joe West should just go, I guess, start designing software for Robot Ump.
Anthony, I didn't change the industry. Injury changed on us. It's changing. Everything's changed. I could dial back 20 years, 50 years. It's all changing.
Sounds like a David Bowie song. Appreciate the telephone call there, Ron. And the insight to some of all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe West is okay, though.
You're okay with Joe West being
no, he's out got of time? He's got other employment. Isn't Joe West like a country singer in the off season?
Apparently a mediocre one, but he's something like that.
Like, doesn't he tour at least like the Southeast or something as like a country singer?
I wouldn't put it past. He's got some kind of musical career. I don't know if career is the right term, but he dabbles.
Yeah, he at least you can find videos of him on YouTube singing at a bar or something.
He's kind of the Uncle Jesse of umpires. I don't think he's a real musician, but he's got instruments.
He gets better looking with age. We know that's not the case. Like Uncle Jesse, dude, like 1980s, cool and all. Like that's a handsome looking guy 30, 35 years later.
True.
Like it's impressive. Good for him.
Stamos.
312-644-6767. Grays Lake Bob, you're next up on the score. What's up, Bob?
They actually had that technology. There was
an
HBO Real Sports segment on the Strike Zone.
Tell Herb this. Yeah. Herb, are you listening?
Excuse me?
I'm like making sure that Herb's listening on the other side of the glass because he's telling me that's just impossible to come up with this technology.
No, it was a great segment on HBO Real Sports. They actually tested it in a minor league game. They still had an ump behind the plate, and they would signal him whether it was a ball or a strike. You know, so he was there to call, like, safe at home or whatever. But they let him know, and they showed how they did a Harvard study on how inaccurate the umpires actually are. And it was, like, mind-boggling on how many calls they get wrong and how sometimes the crowd influences their call. Like, if everybody's all hyped up and they can punch somebody out on a call of strike three. But, yeah, it was a really interesting segment. And they had the technology where they could adjust from batter to batter.
Appreciate the telephone call there, Bob.
They also have self-driving cars as well.
Yeah, you against it, self-driving cars?
Yeah, because they're killing people. No, exactly. They're not ready yet. Neither is Robot Ump. Keep Rosie on the sidelines until she's ready.
What do you have against Rosie? We have to have that. That robot has to be named Rosie, by the way. Even though not actually an actual robot, we're gonna put a robot there just to put Rosie.
I mean, I prefer Robo Ump, but Rosie sounds more friendly.
Rosie the Robot Ump.
Yeah.
Got to bring her back from the Jetsons. I don't think she's been doing much since then.
Probably not. They probably retired Rosie a minute ago.
Alsip and Grant next up on the score. What's up, Grant?
Hey, I'm calling. I heard a point that if you have an automated zone, it somewhat takes away the responsibility of the catcher receiving the ball because now they no longer need to worry about catching balls and strikes, and that can eliminates the possibility of stealing bases because they just need to receive it, and they can throw guys out. They can pretty much stand up. They don't need to worry about catching it in a crouch, to whereas you pretty much eliminate the idea of stealing bases in the game of baseball.
Okay, Grant. Score one from Alsip.
Damn, it's a good thought, but I still think that you have to receive. Like, I don't think that's going to be one that just takes away from stealing bases. You still have to execute receiving the ball, making the transfer to your hand, and throwing a ball on a damn line to second base or third base to throw somebody out.
Contreras is just catching it at the ready position.
Throw at 95.
Yeah, he's just catching it at the ready. Hips already cocked, arms loaded. They're not running on Contreras if he's ready like that.
I mean, they're pro catchers. They're probably going to throw it on the money if they're standing up ready to go.
Yeah, the ball has to get there, and I don't think that it's going to eliminate help. So stealing bases is already going away anyway. If you really want to get into it, sure, this probably doesn't help that.
I think Grant just rung you up. Woo-ha!
If that's why, if you're that excited about the stealing bases part, then fine. Okay, I guess you can have that argument there, Grant. Hat tip to you for bringing up that part of it. But I mean, I don't look at it as like that being the whole. I don't know. I can't look at the lack of stolen bases. Oh man, gonna take that part away.
Like to me, and you know, as a
it
guy,
it doesn't
who,
make up for getting more calls right and getting a strike zone that's consistent.
As a guy who coached the game and played game, I feel like the human element that involves the umpires is a part of the preparation and the strategy that goes into it. And you know, you're researching what crews do and how they call games and how that affects the way you can operate in certain moments. To me, that's just all a part of the gumbo of every game that you step onto the field. And for the players and for the coaches, the umps and the refs and every all the officials who were involved in those contests, they're a part of that equation in those situations too. I don't look forward to eliminating that. I know a lot of you futuristic types just want to get rid of all the humans who are doing it. To me, I'm not looking for robo ump.
That's Anthony
humans.
Herron. I'm Nick Szepkowski. Rosie the umpire. Who knows when she's going to join us tonight. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call. Text messages always welcome. 67011 as well. Haven't talked a whole lot of Bears tonight. Roquan Smith made his introduction today at Bears. I guess, what is it? What's post-training camp called? What is it called when you report to Hallis Hall instead of Bourbonnais?
Just preseason now.
Just preseason? Yeah. Just the preseason?
Camp has broken.
Well, he made his preseason debut at Bears practice at all. Something to get into with that. And we're going to talk to Corey Wooten, the man, the former Bears draft pick, the Northwestern product, and the guy that finished Brett Favre's career. Talk some Bears with him coming up at 9 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We had a wedding all of a sudden? Welcome back in, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Getting ready to talk some Bears, but with the bed music that comes back from this, I can't help but, like, this has to be, like, the most played song at a wedding ever, isn't it? Have you ever been to a wedding it hasn't been played at?
Brown Eyed Girl.
Brown Eyed Girl, you say, Herb?
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be on a short list. I swear, I think every wedding I've ever been to, that song plays. I don't even know the actual name of it.
September.
Yeah, September.
Very hard to remember, yeah.
Do you know who it's done by, Shep? That will be giving you extra credit with all three of us.
Hell if I know. Know that during my wedding, I danced to this with my mother-in-law.
Okay.
Leslie.
You know who Earth, Wind, and Fire is?
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth.
The elements.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Do you remember? No. Have you ever been to a wedding where that song was not played? Because that is...
It's the ultimate celebratory song.
Is it? I thought celebration would be the ultimate celebratory song.
No.
It's a little too obvious.
Yeah?
It's a little too in your face.
What's so great about September, by the way? Like, that is the month I ended up getting married in, but what's so great about September that it's the celebratory song?
It's pure awesome.
If I could use a word from Matt Spiegel, it sonically helps you celebrate whatever you're celebrating in. Whatever it is, a birthday, a wedding, anything. It could be a funeral, and this song comes on, everybody's instantly
happy. Everybody starts having a dance party because September comes on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a funeral in the middle of December for a guy that was born in October, and September comes on, everybody starts dancing.
They will at least tap their feet.
It is depending on the gravity of the funeral. You can't at least give like a head nod or
You saw me.
A little bit. It naturally
does
that. I
didn't
want
to start dancing. It just happened.
Well, you do dance a lot, though, in here.
Well,
like, it doesn't take much of a
radio
song.
Radio station.
Right, but it doesn't take much of, like, any kind of bed music.
Well, definitely
it'd be, like,
singing.
Sad, sappy type stuff.
Definitely singing.
You get the little moves going and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's Anthony Herr, Nick Szczepkowski with you, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes you're smoother than that. You judge anything off of my dance moves and you're in trouble.
A couple of photos on your Facebook page where you look like you kind of... dropping it. I don't know how hot it was, but it looked like there was a photo or two.
If it was hot, then I cooled the temperature down. There's no doubt about that. I don't know what pictures you're necessarily talking about. I don't doubt that they're there because I've tried to cut a rug before in my life. Not really ever done so very successfully, but I've at least put the effort in.
Maybe I was kind of misdiagnosing what was happening in the photo, but there was definitely some knee bend. There was some crouch to it. And I don't, it was a still photo, so I don't know if there was music being played for certain, but there was a crouch, and it looked like Shep might have been breaking it down.
I probably was, and probably breaking it down horribly along the way, in all honesty.
You broke it down, Shep.
If we're really getting into that part of it. No, I am not a good dancer at all, and it's like, and I know I'm not.
Even
so
lubricated?
It gets to that point, even lubricated, and my wife just looks at me like, stop, just stop. Like, what are you doing? Just stop. You're embarrassing me. You're embarrassing the family name. Stop doing whatever you're trying to do.
That's why you got to go to Vegas.
It's like, I'm feeling it, though.
That's why
I'm
you got to go to Vegas.
It's just like, ugh, this is not good. And then you see pictures the day later, and you're like, man, you were right. I should have listened to you.
That wasn't nearly as smooth as I thought it was.
You know a thing or two about what you're talking about. What am I supposed to be excited about with Roquan Smith now showing up? Simply that the contract's done? Simply that we're closer to seeing him in a Bears uniform for preseason action, probably in a game or two of those, and that he'll probably be ready to go against the Packers now? Like, it's nice, and it's okay. The story of him not signing his deal and being the only holdout is over. But what's the exciting part now? That just the fact that he's in camp?
The fact that he's
or
in camp,
camp
and yes, that he's now joined the team during the preseason, so they're no longer in Bourbonnais, camp is broken, but that he's with the Bears and that there's enough time at this point. This is what I referenced it last night. As soon as the holdout began, I said, all right, after that second preseason game, he needs to get to camp the point I was making was separate from whether or not the negotiation's going well, but as far as him actually being ready for the opener, after that second Bears preseason game, second of five, he needs those last 3 weeks of the preseason to actually be prepared for the opener with certainty. You know, if he'd have gotten here maybe next week, could he be ready for the opener? Sure. But that good 3 weeks puts him in a certain mode. Like, he will certainly, there shouldn't be any reason he's not ready for the opener unless if there's something that takes place here in the coming days, if they kind of rush him into things or if he's not quite ready and he maybe tweaks something and has some kind of soft tissue injury. But barring that, there's time here for him to be ready for the opener without a doubt in my mind. So that part times up well. That's the convenience of him actually joining the team at this point. He could have joined them shortly before the opener or the week of or something like that. And, maybe he would have participated. Probably not. But at this point, there is time for Roquan Smith to, by the opener, in theory, look like the guy the Bears thought they were drafting. That's just the, from a contractual standpoint, the timing of it, that's the important part of the timing. Now, functionally, Nick Kwiatkowski is a good football player, good inside linebacker, who I was surprised they flirted around with the idea of moving him to outside linebacker, because that to me, now having never seen him play it, perhaps I'm wrong, he doesn't strike me, just in looking at his frame, his movement skills, as a guy, and when he has had some times coming downhill or blitzing situationally, he doesn't strike me as a guy who's necessarily going to mold himself into a quality edge rusher. So I was surprised over the offseason when they toyed around with that thought. For him, Nick Kwiatkowski, it's great that he can add depth to inside linebacker, but he's not the player that Roquan Smith will become. As of today, is he, you know, maybe going to be a better linebacker in the Bears' defense by this weekend?
For
maybe,
the very short
Smith
term.
Isn't ready. Yeah, that's not going to last
maybe
long.
A couple weeks into the regular season, but not much of a shelf life beyond that.
No, that's not going to last long at all, because Roquan Smith is so sudden and can bring such force. Can impose his will on the opponent in a way that Kwiatkowski isn't really physically capable of. And not only does Smith have the speed for it, but he plays with the tenacity to do it as well. And that goes to the point I was making yesterday about how I believe he'll be used in Vic Fangio's scheme in a different way than Jarrell Freeman was ever used, than even Danny Trevathan was used, for guys who operate more sideline to sideline. I think we're going to see Roquan Smith utilized in a way that should, if not just for himself, but put his teammates in positions to get more takeaways, to force the issue on the opposing offense, where, you know, we saw the interception that happened the other night, where there was some pass rush. Leonard Floyd made a nice inside move. You know, John Ross, a receiver from the Bengals, falls down. That leads to Kyle Fuller getting a pick six. That type of pressure may not consistently come from both edges, but what they can bring up the middle with Roquan Smith, with Akeem Hicks, with other guys who are actually bringing force directly into the face of the quarterback, I think that's going to be part of his role within this defense, to actually be a splash sort of playmaker, to send him on some seek and destroy missions that his athleticism will dictate he has the ability to make. So I think that's going to be the exciting thing about watching him in this scheme, because inside linebackers within Vic Fangio's scheme, they can at times get lost, because their role is not always such that puts them in playmaking positions. It's more just about, you know, cleaning up trash at times. But I anticipate Roquan Smith being used in more of a playmaking, aggressive sort of mindset with what they try to do with him. So that, to me, is the thing that once he actually does get on the field, we'll assume it'll be next week, you know, going into their fourth preseason game, when we would likely see him in game action for the first time. And that'll be the important one to see, because all the starters should end up playing a lot in next week's game. So that's the one I'm going to be most interested in, is will we start to see immediately how they utilize him in a downhill sort of mentality, or will they maybe hold back the throttle on that a bit until the Bears actually get towards some regular season games, to not necessarily show that on film as much during the preseason?
That's Anthony Herrod. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. Going to be joined in moments by Corey Wooten. You're doing some television with him. For those who missed the announcement last night, you're going to be on Fox 32 WFLD here in the city. Their post-game coverage for Bears games this fall. And your buddy, Corey Wooten, going to be joining you alongside you for those post-game contests, which hopefully result in a decent amount of Bears wins, so we're still interested in this team by the middle of December.
Yeah, that'll make a big difference. If the season is fun and exciting and the Bears are doing some positive things on the field, that's going to end up making a big difference. But, yeah, it'll be Lou Kanellis leading the way as the anchor on the show for the Bears post-game show. It's the official home of the Bears is there on Fox 32 this year. We'll have the official Bears post-game show. So Lou and Jim Miller and one of Northwestern's finest, Corey Wooten, they'll be on the set, and I'm going to be able to join them. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Like I mentioned last night, grew up a Bears fan, ended up playing in the division against them with the Lions and Packers, so it's going to be cool. This will be one of the ways for me to live out one of those, you know, sort of pseudo dreams as a kid of, well, in what way could I maybe be involved in Bears coverage in some way? And that's going to be a way to do it. So I'm really looking forward to that.
See, that's why you should have played video games past Madden 93. About 95, 96, you started to be able to create a player. You could create yourself, and even if you failed all your tests, you could still sign yourself as a free agent.
I played your beloved EA Sports games a bit in college. I was just never a big gamer, but just the fact that when I was at Iowa, I was on video games there. So, all right, give me the sticks. Let me at least play with my, you know, my video game version of my football player.
Was your $12 worth it?
Oh, I certainly didn't buy the game. Oh, you mean the Ed O'Bannon $12
that Ed O'Bannon got you? Was that worth it?
I'm thinking that check got shipped somewhere in either Alabama or Nashville or some previous homestead that I had before we actually moved here to Chicago. I never did see my $12.
Oh, yeah, your $12 or whatever.
Still waiting on it.
That killed the greatest sports video game that there ever was. Damn you, Ed O'Bannon. But I totally understand where you're coming from. That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Shepkowski. We're joined next by Corey Wooten to break down some Bears preseason action here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.